Welcome back to After Hours. We've done 1 hour, 7 to 8. This is 8 to 9, and usually I'd be on from 9 to 11. This is a revelation. It will, I think, add years to my life. And it's light outside, too, not the longest day of the year. My next guest on the phone is Chris Green, an English professor at DePaul University and the founding editor of what I think of as one of the most ambitious, empowering, and altruistic endeavors in any college in this country. It's called BigShouldersBooks.com. Chris, I don't know, have we ever met?
I think I met you once at a Printer's Row book fair table.
Okay, that's eminently possible. You know, I hope you know how highly I think of Big Shoulders Press. It is a arm of the DePaul University that has published. I think this is maybe the fifth or sixth book you've done, and they are all meant to, well, you describe, you're one of the founders of it, along with my friend Miles Harvey, whose new book about the greatest confidence man in the history of middle America is coming out soon. What is Big Shoulders to you?
Right. It really is a unique press in the city. Basically, the mission is to give voice to issues and communities in the city that might not normally have one.
Yeah.
And then we give the books away for free.
I know that is
so. That's
the altruistic part of this thing, and for free in order to spark conversations in different places around the city. True.
Right. We hope because we can give them away for free that the books reach people that might not normally buy such a book, and you can literally almost order any number of copies that you might like, and we ask that you simply leave a message as to why you needed or you need these various books. And so we hear from all kinds of people, across the city, really even the world. We've given away tens of thousands of copies of these various books.
That so warms my heart is what universities should be doing. That kind of outreach is terribly important. I'm sure these last few months, the latest book edited by you is titled American Gun, a poem by 100 Chicagoans. It must have taken a couple of years to pull this together, didn't it, Chris?
It did. Yes, it took almost exactly 2 years. So it was a challenge. I mean, Chicago's unique because it has so many different communities of poets. So it was really an adventure to try to reach beyond, the people that I know. And, I tried to go out of my way to find a variety of poets in terms of age, gender, race, ethnicity, and poetic experience. And so there's some very well-known local poets, Hakimata Booty, Kevin Colval, Ed Roberson, etc. But then I also really wanted to save the last quarter of the poem for young teen poets in the city's south and west side.
Yeah, and knowing Kevin and Haki and admiring them tremendously, I think some of the best stuff in this book is from kids. It was basically you wanted to address, and this makes it so chillingly topical, I think, in the midst of all the other news by which we've been buried justifiably in the tragic murder of George Floyd and the ongoing tragedy of COVID-19, that this is about gun violence. And today, if you read the papers or listened to the news, the last day was one of the most violent in Chicago's violent history, with more than 60 people shot and punctuated by the death of a 3-year-old by gun violence. This, in conceptualizing this, Chris Green, and talking to the poets, what aside from it, I do want to get into the wonderful, wonderful poetic method in the book. But what did you tell them? What did you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody has their own unique relationship with gun violence. In the city, I think before the pandemic, it was really the epidemic of gun violence that I think was on a lot of people's minds. And, in certain parts of the city, really, I think gun violence is like the virus that a lot of young people in particular feel like that's what they're going to die from.
No question.
And, as you said, again, the despite the quarantine and social distancing, et cetera, the gun violence has not gone down since, the epidemic. So, yeah, no, I wanted to leave the prompt relatively open just to see what each individual poet would bring, you know, based on their own, you know, feelings and ideas. So I think in one sense, the poem is unique because it really is a community response. Yeah. I feel like if I would have asked 100 poets to write 100 different poems, the book wouldn't have received as much attention. But the fact that, you know, you see the power of community now with the various protests, I think the poem in itself kind of embodies that idea of, you know, it's a decentralized, you know, a writing project where no one poet is, prioritized over another.
Well, I was thinking, you and I know a lot of the poets in the book, and if you'd asked 100 certain poets to do it, the book would have been 1,000 without any parameters. The book could have been 1,000 pages long. It is your poem that begins this, followed by the great Sin Salach. Talk about the... I'm going to read yours. May I?
Sure.
"Many by now are dead again, the boy men. Their lives echo from the sidewalks. Somewhere near the Black River and bare trees, sirens are converging." It is 4 lines, as are the others in the book. And the form is unique because the next, you would supply, I suppose you've supplied Sin Salach with your poem, correct?
Stanza, right.
Stanza, sorry, yeah. your stanza. Right. I think of it as like 100 poems.
I think that's a good, I like that idea.
No, I do. I mean, I really do. They're because they are all interrelated. And what I've done too is, after reading the whole thing, you know, front to back in order, I jumped around a little bit and I thought it was, I got a different kind of vibe from it by doing that. You know, because I certainly didn't remember each one of the stanzas, but it was a different kind of reading experience. We can talk about that later. Somewhere in a bar, somewhere where it's two very literate guys yammering on about some esoteric form. But what is the form called?
So, yeah, the form is called a pantoum, and basically it's where every line is repeated twice. So the second and fourth line of one stanza becomes the first and third line of the next stanza, and on and on. And it's not necessarily meant to be written by a group, but I felt like that it lent itself to a kind of a chorus-like song.
Oh, I think it's...
So, each poet had basically a day to write their stanza responding to the previous poet. And it was done exquisite corpse style, so everybody just saw the previous stanza. They didn't see the whole poem.
Yeah, I think you couldn't possibly have shown, you know, each person the other, you know, whatever you had at that point. Did anybody slough off their deadline? Was anybody unable to do it in a day?
Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to name them, Chris. You don't have to name them.
Yeah, right. I woke up every morning, you know, realizing I needed to move the pantoum. And so some poets work relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I would send them one stanza, they would get right back to me. Others really waited until, you know, the last hour to send me their stanza. So it was really interesting to watch the poem in slow motion. I really wasn't sure what it was, you know, and like you say, I mean, you can dip into it and...
Oh, of course.
Any stanza can be looked at as a poem itself, but then the whole thing has, it's hard to articulate what the whole poem feels like because it's, again, all these individual voices somehow, you know, speaking together.
Well, and I think because they are individual voices, they are likely to hit an individual reading this book in different ways. I, of course, drawn to, you know, some poets I know. I mean, here, for instance, because it's Sunday and Mark Smith would be putting on the Poetry Slam at the Green Mill if it were not COVID time. He writes, "Let us pretend this summer sun's a safety switch. Eyes upward, choosing not to thumb the lever. The buyer leaves his wares behind. The cost of payment on the future." So many of these, Chris Green, who is the poet included, but also the editor of this book, I was terribly, terribly moved by the entire thing, and I will be going back to it frequently. Stay on the line for a couple of minutes, Chris. I want to ask you some more questions about not just Big Shoulders, about, you know, if you've read Miles Harvey's new soon-to-be bestseller, and what makes you a poet, too. So hang on. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to me, Rick Hogan, in this very new, comfortable 7 to 9 p.m. time slot on WGN Radio. I'm talking with Chris Green, a teacher at DePaul, but also, more prominently, to my mind, the editor of a riveting and I think very important book, American Gun, a poem by 100 Chicagoans. I don't know how many of you read newspapers. One hopes that there are some of you out there. There was a very nice piece about you, Chris, and the book by Darcel, my colleague Darcel Rocket, in, I think, Thursday's paper. You know, the funny thing for me, Chris, I've been a newspaper man my whole life. When I see something online, I don't know if it's been in the paper, it's going to be in the paper, it's there. Right. Go to Tribune.com, ChicagoTribune.com, and find Darcel Rocket's. That was a lovely piece, did you not think?
Yes, I really appreciated her, and I loved seeing some of the faces of the contributors in the book.
Oh, yeah, some of the young people you have been able to find. Some of them, I have to assume, you found through Young Chicago Authors or some other means.
Right, yeah, there's a good number from Young Chicago Authors, and then also I wanted to reach into some of the alternative high schools in the city.
Oh, good for
statistically,
you.
They experience the most gun violence in Chicago, so I wanted to. I actually gave them like the final word. The last eight stanzas are from kids in a couple of those schools.
If you do read newspapers, also you would have read the mayor of Chicago responding to this horrific weekend with more than 60 people killed and a 3-year-old among them. She said, it's funny, Chris, she said there are no words to describe what happened this weekend, but there have to be words, are there not? That is, otherwise I think we're lost, and I think this book and its words go a long way to certainly not to fixing the system, but understanding and perhaps healing, or am I being too optimistic?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in some, it sort of feels like an extended lamentation. You know, there's something strangely formal about the feeling that the poem has. You know the individual, some of the individual poets, as do I. And really, I was surprised when I received their stanzas because they didn't really sound like themselves. Like they were reaching for something, you know, beyond themselves, which was, you know, I think really unique. And I think ultimately there is a sense of healing, I think, when you get to the end of the poem. I mean, also a certain amount of hopelessness, but also this idea that all of these people are feeling what they're feeling, you know, which I think resonates with others as well.
No question. A young poet that I don't know as well as I know people like Haki and Al DeGeneva and Kevin Koval, but Dylan Weir has an interesting... How did you find Dylan, if I can ask?
Dylan was one of my former students at DePaul. So there's a handful of students or former students in the poem as well.
There's nothing wrong with a college student who wants to study poetry, I've always said. Here's Dylan Weir's. Clumsier, sweat slippery, emitting static scents. Let us pretend this summer sun's a safety switch. For a moment hesitating, losing resolve, the buyer leaves his wares behind. It's a pretty decent poem, and I forgive me for calling these stanzas poems, but I really do think of them, and thanks for saying I'm not wrong in so doing. I think of each one as a poem.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was a unique challenge because I think everybody wanted to do justice to the importance of the issue and also to, you know, do justice to the poet that comes before them. So, normally a stanza and 100 stanza poem, you might be able to overlook some, but as you say, they each sort of stand alone.
Yeah,
you can read the book that way.
I couldn't agree more. I would be terribly remiss if I didn't read Kevin Koval's poem, because Kevin has had a profound, empowering presence on the youth of this city. The kids who have come, I remember, Chris, I don't know if you know, I was a judge at the very first Louder Than a Bomb, where there were literally like six poets reading. And now it is a worldwide phenomenon. Kevin's is this. Guns aren't creative, aren't art, and pollute the hand of its devised can control. The craft is off, the safety sprung, the color of chalk lines. Still hear bullets, hear the living. Chorus, that silence, is the north side of the city, turning the 10 o'clock news to gated prison condos. I cannot read the way Kevin Koval reads. Is there any disappointment in the fact that I don't know what you might have had planned for public presentations of American Gun? Had you planned some public stuff that got derailed?
Yes. Yes, actually, we were hoping to have a large reading at a auditorium at DePaul. I was hoping to have maybe 20 of the poets read, through the poem. And, we had something, planned, and now we're probably going to have, a virtual launch in the fall. But,
I think that could be tremendously, tremendously powerful, as is the book. Could you spend a few minutes, Chris Green, talking about, I was also taken and charmed by the design of this book, which I think is just stunning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the books for Big Shoulders are all designed by Natalie Bontumassi, whose father was a poet at UIC, Ralph Mills.
Oh, sure. I knew Ralph. My father was great friends with Ralph Mills.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she's, very gifted. And like you say, I think that the formatting of the book is like a visual poem. The poem is sort of, it's almost like a missalette of some kind, where there's black pages that are, kind of holding the poem. And then she has this kind of graphic representation of sort of blood droplets throughout the book. So it's almost like the book is bleeding in a way.
Yeah, and she also, the way in which she, you do not have the familiar, author tagline at the end of each four line stanza of the poem. They are just, they are off. They are a little more subtle. They are, I cannot tell you. How did this book change you at all, Chris Green?
Yeah, I mean, I've done various anthologies, but again, I've never tried to do something with 100 poets writing in a row. And like I say, it was just interesting to see it come together in slow motion. And it feels like something sort of ancient, ultimately. It's like this big slab of poetry that, it sort of echoes what I think poetry used to be in terms of, commemorating a civilization's, living and dying.
Yeah. And in this case, sadly, mostly dying. You read, it could not be more topical, because this is a violent city, and we don't know. I'm speaking for myself. I know little, but we don't know what it is like to live in one of these areas where gunfire and violence is a disease. It is a virus. It is a killer. Chris Green, the next time I meet you, I want to have a drink with you and talk poetry. You can be terribly, terribly proud of what you've been able to pull off here. It's a very ambitious way of doing something, and I cannot imagine it being more well done. Simply can't. And now I'm going to have now I'm going to have to read your poems too. You've collected in Everywhere West. I Remember Chicago, and the Veterans of War book. I think I reviewed for the Tribune. It was a very profound experience for me. And also, you're one of the people behind Big Shoulders Books. And ladies and gentlemen, you just go to BigShouldersBooks.com, and if you would write and tell them the reason you would like this book, you will get a free copy of this book. I suppose if you were altruistic yourself, you would send them a nice check so they can continue doing this work. Chris, thanks a million for coming on, and keep at it. We need it.
Thank you so much, Ray.
My pleasure.
Appreciate
it. Absolute pleasure. Take care.